Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC. And this is the best animated shows ever. So far.
You put two ellipses in. There's not two ellipses. You put an ellipsis before ever and after ever. What do we do on this show, MC?
We watch, discuss, and rank every animated show ever, eventually. Hopefully. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. As long as we stay sane as we go. Now, I said that, and it makes it sound like we've watched something bad. We haven't watched anything bad in a while. Like,
no.
It's been a pretty good run. And with that, we are here today to talk about Gate, which was a show that MC suggested. Japanese.
Supernatural? Yeah. We decided the theme for last week would do supernatural stuff. So I thought this fit in fairly well.
Yeah. The literal translation for Gate, I don't know if you've seen this, but the literal translation is Gate. Thus, the Japanese self-defense force fought there. Which, like, is a cool title. I mean, you could just subtitle this, like, Gate JSDF, I feel like would work really well as a subtitle. Because Gate's very, a little nondescript. Anyway, Gate is a fantasy novel series first. Do you know anything about the history of this? I did a little digging on it.
No, I didn't read anything into it.
So we actually got some info from our friend Ninja Boy that we're going to listen to here in a second. But just for the little bit of background that I found out, it was originally posted on a user-generated novel publishing website called Arcadia. So, like, this was a Tumblr novel. Like the dude was writing it posting it to just a self-publishing website from 2006 to 2009. And then it was picked up, and they did a manga adaptation of it. And then they did some manga spin-offs of it. And then they did the anime of it, which started in 2015. And then they did there's a light novel series for it as well, which I believe what we found out before when we did some digging. So let's see. It went novel series, light novel series, then manga. I think the light novel series is where it's like, it's a novel, like a middle grade book, but with like illustrations every couple pages. I think that's what we found out when we dug into that before with,
okay.
I think Restaurant to Another Universe had a light novel series as well. So there's been a whole bunch of different versions of the Gate story, but of course what we're talking about is the animated show, which, like I said, started in 2015. So with that background, I think Ninja Boy, attempted to provide some context for us. I haven't listened to this yet. I'm going to pull it up and we're going to listen to it together.
Hey, Tortle and MC, and to all the listeners of the Best Animated Show Ever So Far podcast. This is Ninja Boy, your resident anime consultant. Glad to be back. Thanks for inviting me to be back on the segment, guys. So for this week's episode of Gate, Thus the Japanese Self-Defense Force Fought There, aka Gate, I was asked to do my usual How Did This Get Made segment. Frankly, there isn't a whole lot that's super interesting to the story of how it got made. The series was written by former JSDF member Takumi Tanai between 2006 and 2009 on a self-publishing website until it got acquired by publisher Alpha Polis in 2010 and got turned into a light novel for over 10 volumes from 2010 through 2015. The popularity of the light novel resulted in a manga adaptation between 2011 and is currently ongoing with 16 volumes out so far. In 2015, the series was adapted into a 24-episode anime produced by A1 Pictures, which is the topic of this episode. There were also a number of spin-off manga, as well as a second light novel series based on the Maritime Self-Defense Force. So, like I said, nothing too complicated here. I could go a little bit into the isekai boom started by Sword Art Online in 2012, that kind of led to producers looking for shows about going to another world in order to try to recreate SAO success financially, you know, hence getting the anime adaptation of Gate. However, I think what's most interesting is to really understand Gate as a series overall, you need a little bit of historical context that goes as far back as 1947, the end of World War II. So strap yourselves in for a quick history lesson. So after the war, Japan, being on the losing side, and had been devastated by the atomic bomb, they were forced to adopt a constitution written by the Americans. Key in this constitution was Article 9, and I'm going to quote verbatim from a translation. Aspiring sincerely to an international peace based on justice and order, the Japanese people forever renounce war as a sovereign right of the nation and the threat or use of force as means of settling international disputes. In order to accomplish the aim of the preceding paragraph, land, sea, and air forces, as well as another war potential, will never be maintained. The right of belligerency of the state will not be recognized. End quote. What this basically means is that Japan has it written directly into its constitution that it cannot use war as a diplomatic tool, and in order to ensure that it cannot have a military force that could, attack another country in any form of capacity. This is pretty extreme, granted, and at the time, it seemed all right. U.S. troops were stationed in Japan. There was a small domestic force of police that, dealt with domestic crime. So, like I said, it seemed reasonable. However, in 1950, the Korean War broke out, and the U.S. needed to move troops out of Japan, which left the country virtually defenseless. So, this was obviously a problem for both the U.S., who, wanted to make sure Japan didn't revert back to lawless ways, and obviously for Japan, they wanted to be able to defend themselves. So over the next few years, it was eventually reinterpreted that, while they couldn't have an army or armed forces that could go instigate war with other countries, that didn't necessarily prevent Japan from having armed forces in order to enact the inherent right of self-defense. So in 1954, the JSDF, also formerly the Japanese Self-Defense Force, was formally created. There's a whole lot of political science stuff that happens after this, but the long and short of it is that shortly after this, it was basically in the U.S. interest that they have an ally in the Pacific region that was, fairly stable and that could defend themselves so that the U.S. would have to expend troops to do so. And given the various war atrocities that Japan had committed during World War II and prior, it was in their interest to be able to defend themselves in case of retaliation from other countries. Over the years, JSDF would grow, but again, never to a point where they could be considered a military force capable of war. And Japan has multiple times reiterated they never would develop nuclear weapons, even if they are considered capable of having the technology to create them. So tying this back to Gate real quick, that's why in the series, when the portal to the other world opens up within Japan, the land that's on the other side of the portal is explicitly labeled as a special region of Japan, not another country. If it was considered foreign to Japan, the JSDF would not be constitutionally allowed to take action in that zone. However, by defining it as a domestic area, the JSDF has jurisdiction. This is why in other anime where the JSDF engages, it's usually dealing with domestic issues in Japan, nothing abroad. All right, there's another chapter to this story though. So about 2006 or so, Japan gets a new prime minister, Shinzo Abe, who currently remains prime minister of Japan over 4 terms, the longest serving in Japan's history. Most relevant to Gate, Abe is a bit of a white right-wing nationalist. He has some revisionist views about Japan's roles in war crimes in World War II, which I won't get into too much detail here. And in general, Japan does have some segments of its population that have strong nationalist tendencies. Given their long documented history and their aspirations to have an empire, that kind of makes sense. But again, that's a whole other conversation. Most relevant to Gate is that Abe has stated many times that he is constantly pushing up against what the boundaries of Article 9 of the Constitution says about having a military force and even about having atomic weapons, arguing that maintaining such weapons and being able to engage in military action abroad, is relevant to Japan's self-defense. In 2013, he had a 5-year plan of military expansion, especially as China's influence in the region has begun to grow, and it's also, in order to deal with the North Korea problem. He called this proactive pacifism. In 2014, there was a reinterpretation of the Constitution to allow for collective self-defense, basically allowing the JSDF forces to come to the aid and defend an ally, in this case the US or Australia, actually, if they were under attack, as opposed to, only allowing it to be used, for absolute domestic self-defense of the Japanese islands. The logic here being that helping an ally abroad defend themselves, you know, is helping yourself defend because you have strong allies to help defend yourself. You know, there was actually a lot of protests against these bills, and his disapproval rate for the first time in a long time went above his approval rate. And there were over 100,000 protesters marching in July of that year. But this reinterpretation and those bills did eventually passing to lead to this more relaxed interpretation of the law. So that kind of sets the stage for where Japan was with regard to their military at the time that Gate aired in late 2015. Now, at the very basic level, you have something akin to that summer that Top Gun came out here in the States. That summer, Air Force recruiters had booths set up at movie theaters across the nation to try to get young men signed up for the Air Force after watching Tom Cruise play volleyball and fly around in planes. Gate has had official collaborations with the JSDF to recruit new members, with the anime girl from the series plastered all over recruiting posters. I can't find any numbers with how effective it actually was, but you gotta give JSDF credit for their creativity with their marketing approaches. Given that they did help fund the production of the series, you could see Gate as, you know, being a form of propaganda to a certain degree. On the other hand, you also have to remember that the author of the original web novel was a former JSDF member, so it was always going to be kind of a positive spin on that military group. In fact, when they got picked up to be adapted for a light novel from the web novel, they had to tone down some of the right-wing rhetoric to make it a little bit more suitable to print for the masses. On another level, though, Gate could be seen as a plea by some in Japan to their fellow countrymen, and in fact to the wider world, to see Japan as responsible in their military actions, to plant the idea that maybe it's okay for Japan to have a full-fledged military of their own. You know, the fact that, you know, the morality in the show isn't really any shades of gray. It's always very black and white, with, frankly, the JSDF always on the white side of that. And JFDS is also always going to be entirely competent and responsible in their actions without any hint of corruption. Those all kind of point to this idea that, you know, Japan is great with their military. You know, especially in, you know, episode 6, they go full on homage to Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. There's a whole scene with helicopters blazing, with Wagner playing in the background. The military is still seen as pretty honorable. You know, they focus on the safety of the locals without asking for any compensation, and they basically act, you know, above reproach. You know, perhaps most telling, though, the JSDF, you know, is not in the special region beyond the gate to conquer it and make use of its resources for their own benefit. Instead, it's pretty stated throughout that they're there just to keep the peace, help the locals, make their lives better, and protect them from destruction so that, you know, they can enlighten this, you know, primitive world with their technology. You know, after all, Japan actually had been in the same place, if you think about it, many years ago. A relatively technologically behind civilization that was suddenly introduced to, you know, modern world technology when Admiral Perry came in on his warship. And, you know, that if that's what JSDF selling, that they're a force for good for, you know, the morals of humanity, you know, who wouldn't want to let them and Japan have more power on the world stage? Of course, there is the fact that, you know, in World War II, Japan did see themselves as liberating and enlightening the countries they were conquering. You know, that kind of shows a little bit of flaw in that logic, or maybe a little bit of ignorance, but, you know, make of that what you will. At the end of the day, I think Gate is what you make of it. It could be seen as a bit of right-wing propaganda advocating for a return of Japan's military might to the world stage. It could also be seen as simply, you know, a fun extension of the isekai boom that started with SAO, with a little bit of, you know, military geekery and weapons nerding out thrown in the mix. It could be seen as a little bit of both. You know, I think, though, that, you know, as Westerners trying to understand this inherently Japanese medium and this particular inherently Japanese story, it's important to know the context in which these shows were made so that you can kind of come to this sort of decisions on your own about what this show is really about. In any case, I hope you liked this analysis. Thanks again to Toyland MC for having me on. I actually started my own anime podcast recently. It's called Yet Another Anime Podcast. It airs on the first and third Fridays of each month, and I look at anime from a number of angles, be it in the context of an anime, you know, studio, a specific director, one series in the history of anime, or a genre of different anime shows, you know, among other ways of looking at anime. Hope to catch you there, but in any case, back to you, Twiddle and MC.
Awesome. Thank you, Ninja Boy. Yeah, he let me know that he's like, I can tell you a little bit about it. I can tell you about how it's like potentially a right-wing propaganda machine. And I was like, yes, yes, do that, because I'm very intrigued. I super appreciate the historical context on it. There is some of what he said that I want to comment on, but I think it will make the most sense to comment it on, or my comments will make the most sense in the context of talking about the first episode. So do you have anything before we go to these messages?
No, I really liked the comment that he made nearing the end there, where he said, you can see it as just like this right-wing propaganda, or you can see it as like this traveling to other worlds with some like gun geekery and like military stuff thrown in. And I was like, oh, I saw it as the second thing. I didn't even think about it as the right-wing propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. I'll talk more about why that was the case for me as we get into it. For now, though, I do just want to give another call out for yet another anime podcast from Ninja Boy there. Yeah, he's got like breakdown so far. So he did a 2020 anime season first impressions, where he talked about like all the new shows that came out and what his impressions were. He talked about how like making anime and manga works and how they, you know, the process. He did a director discussion on Shinichiro Watanabe. Oh, I feel so bad. I thought I had that the first name. I felt like I did so good on. And then he did, and this I think will speak to you, MC, a series breakdown on Neon Genesis Evangelion, which I believe you have evangelized to me about before.
I said it's really weird and you have to see it, but, I've only seen, bits and pieces of it. Like, I haven't sat down and watched it all before, and well, I hear it's... The movie's even crazier than, like, the TV show.
If you want a full breakdown of it in only 30 minutes, go check out yet another anime podcast. But for now, we'll be right back after these messages. Friends, this is Troidal Power, host of the Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power, a podcast where I, your host, Troidal Power, play through games in a powerful way. And I'm inviting you to listen to Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power, a podcast where I, your host, Troidal Power, play through games in a powerful way. You can find it and a lot of other weird shows at probablywork.com.
And we're back.
We are back to talk about Gate Season 1, Episode 1, which is called... The Self-Defense Force Goes to Another World. This aired in Japan on July 3rd of 2015. I actually couldn't find specific information on when it aired in the U.S., so we'll just go with that July 2015 date. It starts off... letting you know, hey, just in case you thought this show wasn't going to be weird, here's just, like, an army of, like, monsters. Anyway, credits.
Oh, tank credits.
Does it do monsters and then tank and then credits?
Yeah.
I think you're right. I just remember being like, wow, that's a lot of monsters. Because all you said was, like, this is a show about a gate opening to another world. I don't think you told me, and also the military, which is, you know, a huge part of this show.
Yeah.
So I seeing those monsters.
I did mention it was in Japan.
You did mention it was Japan and Tokyo. Seeing those monsters right away, I was like, is this going to be a spoopy show? Did MC sign me up for another spoopy show? He knows I don't like spoopy shows, but it doesn't end up being too spoopy.
No. There's a little bit of spoopy, but it's like, oh, it's not enough to actually be scary.
Mm-hmm. So when the show starts in earnest, after... Okay. I guess we have to talk about the credits. The credits... Listen, anime shows. And cartoons in general. I love you. But stop showing me every goddamn thing that's going to happen in the credits. You know what this made me think of, MC? Is it made me think of Dragon Quest XI. Because when I booted up Dragon Quest XI for the first time, it was like, hey, do you want to listen to like a catchy-ass pop song while a bunch of super cool visuals come across your screen? And I was like, yeah, Dragon Quest XI, I do want to do that. And then it shows me, like, every character that's ever going to pop up in the game. And I was like, hang on, are you spoiling, like, the entire game for me? And it's like, yeah, yeah, we are. And I'm like, why you do that?
That happens in this show as well. You get, like, scenes straight out of the show. But it also shows you each of the characters and their ranks. And
which is weird, because those characters aren't in this episode yet. So it's like, it's a weird thing to put in the first episode.
Yeah.
And it shows you, like, these, like, Lolita anime girls that hang out in the back of a Humvee. And I'm like, who are they? Why are you showing me this? Stop showing me this. Just let me discover it on my own. And it's like, what if the military was helping out some fantasy creatures get a wagon out of their ditch? And I'm like, don't tell me that that's going to happen. Like, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
You know, I guess Darkwing Duck does this as well. Like, it shows you a bunch of the villains. But Darkwing Duck's not a serialized show. So I don't feel like that actually, like, gives anything away, really. Whereas in this, I'm like, I don't know. It's weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
Post-credits.
Guy on a train.
We meet Yoji Itami, who is, like, thinking to himself about how, like, listen, I'm a man of two worlds. I'm a duality encompassed in a man. And of those dualities, I really only have one face, and that real one face is Batman. Bruce Wayne is just a mask. Except for when I say Batman, I mean being a nerd. And I'm a total nerd, and being a non-nerd is my mask.
Yeah, he's a massive nerd, and he's also a soldier.
We don't know that yet. That's important that we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
You probably knew that. You've seen this before.
Yeah.
So you see this nerd on a train, and you're like, he's a soldier. And I see this nerd on the train, and I'm like, what a goddamn nerd.
Yeah, and he starts fantasizing about being a knight in shining armor and fighting monsters, essentially.
Well, he's right. Playing a little, like, you know, he's playing your goddamn Starfleet Command game on his phone and imagining that he's the captain of a starship, and then he runs out of energy and has to go tap on some dilithium crystals or whatever and is like, oh, no, except for all that but fantasy instead of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Do you imagine yourself in a Starfleet uniform standing on the bridge of a ship when you play Starfleet? Starfleet Farmville? Yes, you do.
I'm part of the...
Yes, you do.
Not Starfleet uniform. I'm an independent. I'm outside of the...
So you're wearing, like, hairy mud, like, pirate's clothes?
Yeah, essentially. I envision myself in pirate clothing.
Totally
or
fair.
Or leather.
You got that vest that Cyrano Jones has in the Tribbles episode where it's just got so many pockets.
Leather jacket.
With so many pockets.
Leather pants. Just all leather.
Leather underpants. Leather socks.
Either that or Rios. Like Rios from Picard.
I suppose that's the more current pirate Star Trek reference. Anyway, dude's on his way to a Comic-Con. And... meanwhile, I mean, you know, MC, you know what happens? Is meanwhile, a big freaking gate opens up in the middle of Japan and monsters and dragons start coming out of it and killing people. That's what happens.
That appears to be what happens. He's playing a game on his phone. It gets interrupted by some error warning message. And then... I guess
he ran out of juice.
It's like we get like... bits and pieces of, like, him traveling through the city and, like, stuff flies in through the background and
he doesn't notice it at all. The only weird thing he notices is he bumps his head at one point and has, like, a vision of, like, an elven warrior maiden and a wizard and the gothic Lolita. And he goes, a real gothic Lolita? And I'm like, that's... okay, you have an elven warrior princess... a mage and a gothic, like, that's a real thing, dude. Like, gothic Lolitas are real. That's not a fantastical creation. That's just a girl who wears, like, super cool dresses. Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah. And he jumps into, like, action or something, because there's just, like, things out in Japan attacking people.
And I like the way he jumps into action is he goes like, hang on, we have to stop this, because he's like a dragon flying around and stuff. He's like, if this doesn't stop soon, they'll have to cancel the Comic-Con. And it does the thing where it's like, you know, anime excited face and like lines flying by in the background. But what he's saying is they'll have to cancel the Comic-Con.
And then he chokes out a warrior.
He stabs a warrior. There's a warrior running at a police officer. He, like, tackles him, disarms him, and uses the guy's own knife to stab the dude to death. And this is where MC, knowing that he's a soldier, is important, because I'm watching this show and going, what a big dumb nerd. I love this guy. He's such a big dumb nerd. And then he murders a man to death in the street. And I went, what? What the heck's going on?
Yeah, it's not real obvious at this point that he's a soldier. But doesn't he introduce himself to someone as a soldier?
In the dub, at least, he doesn't. Because he runs up to some cops and is like, we've got to get these people inside of the walls or whatever. Yeah. Like, because the Titans are coming and we've got to... And they're like, why should we listen to you? And he's like, listen, do you want to argue with me about this all day or do you want to save these people? And then another monster runs up and he, like, flips around and does that move that Trinity does sometimes where he, like, jumps up on their shoulders and whips them over and knocks them down onto the ground. And then he's like, well, and the cops are like, do what he says. And he doesn't say, also, I'm a part of the Japanese Self-Defense Force.
No,
in the dub, maybe he does. But in the sub, maybe he does. But in the dub, he did not. He did not say, I'm pulling rank. He's just a goddamn comic book nerd who keeps murdering people, and the cops are like, I guess we should listen to him. And then, basically, he ends up helping save a bunch of people's lives by kind of marshalling the cops into getting people behind the walls. And then the attack stops, and it jumps to, like, later on where he's getting commendations for his actions because he's now, like, the hero of the incident or whatever. He gets a promotion to lieutenant and then finds out that, like, he's being assigned to a group that is going to be the first, like, exploratory force to go through the gate because, as Ninja Point pointed out, the Prime Minister has decided that the land on the other side of the gate is a part of Japan, and so they're going to go and set up, like, a defense force presence in that region.
You're just going to skip over the part where there's, like, the enemy, like, army and the monsters, or just get mowed down by the Japanese Defense Force.
Oh, where the helicopter comes in and shoots a dragon out of the sky?
Oh, yeah, and there's just, like, guys with machine guns, and they're just laying into them, and they've got their shields up, and it's just going through the shields, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also, I think it's around this point that we get, like, the one... like line of intent from any of the folks from the other side of the gate, which is one of the knights saying that, like, they have houses here built of clay and stone, just like home. I knew that it wouldn't be so different, or something like that. Other than that, we don't really hear from the invading force or whatever they are. They come in, they kill a bunch of people, and then they get mowed down, including killing the dragon, which made me sad. That poor dragon. Yeah. That's like killing a soldier's horse, you know? The horse isn't on the enemy side. He's just a horse. The dragon was just a dragon. Shoot down the dragon rider, not the dragon.
But, yeah, there's, like, a bunch of monsters and, like, fantasy stuff going on now in the middle of Japan. So, of course, Japan's like, oh, we gotta... That's part of Japan now. We gotta secure our borders. So, this little area around this gate, we're going to go protect, essentially.
What happens. They've also... So it eventually jumps to 3 months later. Like, it takes 3 months for them to prepare to send this this group in. But it does show that they've built up, like... I mean, for lack of a better word, a gate in front of the gate. Like, where it has... The gate is just kind of a big archway, but they've built, like, a... door in front of it so that nothing can get through, which Becky came in partway through while I was watching this and was like, why do they need to go through the other side if they built a door? Why don't they just, like, leave it there? And I was like, I guess maybe because they don't know if, like, an army is amassing on the other side who can break down the door. Maybe, I don't know, because that seemed like a pretty good door.
Yeah, no, well, it you never know what's going to come through or how they're going to get around their, like, how much of a gap between the door and the edge of the portal is there?
Right.
Does it allow for that? Like, we don't know how that all works.
And yeah.
If something can be placed just on the inside of the door to blow it up,
mm-hmm.
See, that's another possibility that could happen. Like,
that's true.
Wait, before we move on.
Crack it, rip it, and sip it. MC, we have to be expedient here. Because while I enjoyed this episode and I'm excited to talk about it with you, my child has definitely pooped while we've been recording. And the smell, this is a very small room with a closed door, and the smell, MC, the smell. So they open up the doors and roll through the gate with their big tanks and stuff, and kind of go check out what's on the other side. I feel like there was one line here that was cute where he's in the tank and somebody like asks him a question, but I can't think of what it is, so I'm just trying to find it again here. Do you recall something there?
I can't remember exactly.
It's the tank. It goes into the portal, and it's very dark inside, and then they turn on their headlights, and they're just, like, driving through blackness. And then it shows the ATV, and they're like, all right, Lieutenant General, the advance units made entry. We're ready to go in, and they start driving the trucks in, and then they're like, oh, man, we might get in a fight right when we get to the other side, but I hope not. And then... God, wasn't there a cute line here? Did I forget? I feel like one of the guys in the car was like, oh, Lieutenant, I have to ask you just one thing. And you think it's going to be something serious about it. And instead he's like, did you like the latest issue of Iron Man? Or something like that. But maybe I'm imagining all of that. Oh, here's a soldier who's gulping. Maybe this is him. He looks up and he goes, you know, First Lieutenant Itami. And he says, do you think there's cat girls on the other side? He's like, I'm gonna bone down with a cat girl. That's what it was. I knew there was something worth laughing at there. He's super excited about the idea that there might be cat women because he wants to have sex with a cat woman. With that, they arrive on the other side of the gate and find just a whole army of knights and monsters and stuff just waiting for him. And that's where the first episode ends.
Yeah.
Kind of an intense ending because you don't know really what's going to happen. Are they immediately going to engage in battle, or are they going to become best friends and help them get their wagons out of ditches? Who knows? Find out next time on Gate. Probably both is what I'm guessing. I'm guessing there's going to be some battling, and then they're going to understand their differences, and then they're going to help them get their wagons out of a ditch. We will get to that next time we watch. I haven't actually watched further because I didn't want to know more. But first I wanted to talk about best and worst first, except for I want to cut that off at the pass and talk about the whole propaganda of it all, because I found this to be a criticism of the use of a military force, because what happened was the army came through, all right, and they killed a whole bunch of people. It was bad. It was horrible. You hate to see death like that happen. But then what happened is for 3 months, nothing happened. And after 3 months, then the prime minister was like, all right, let's send our own army through to the other side. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe in those 3 months, they could have sent through like a Humvee with a diplomat in it just to be like, hello, we're Japan. Nice to meet you. And instead, what they do is they wait 3 months with nothing happening, and then they send a huge military force through, which to me reads as trying to get revenge. It does not read as a peaceful act to me. So I was seeing this as a criticism of military. What did you think about that aspect of it?
This is one of the weird things. Like, I grew up with both my parents in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can see, like, sort of both sides of the argument, but at the same time, I have this idea that you shouldn't really be sending people off to another world if they're not gonna if it happens more than once that you're attacked from this one place, yes, you should go and like try and stop that from happening again.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is they got attacked once and they immediately went to a military solution. Like, it took 3 months, but...
Right. If it was immediate, it would actually be more permissible to me. But the fact that it was 3 months, like, I understand immediately being like, we gotta deal with this, you know, September 12th in the United States. I understand why Americans were pissed off and ready to go to war. But then if you wait 3 months, like, surely everybody's had a chance to, like, think about it.
Probably had something to do with, like, preparations and whatnot.
Here's what's interesting about this, though, is I read on the Gate Wikia that there were some differences from the manga to the anime. In the manga, one, the force that came through killed a bunch of people, just like they did in the anime, and then they took all those bodies and stacked them up into the middle of the street, just like I do when I play an Elder Scrolls game, in order to warn everyone else that I'm coming for you. So that makes the invasion a little bit more menacing and makes the response, I feel like, a little more justified. But also, two,
yes.
The response was immediate in the manga. They go through the gate the next day in the manga instead of 3 months later. And I feel like that may be less realistic from a like planning perspective, but I think it makes the response more reasonable in my book.
Yeah.
So having said that, MC, best and worst, it's time for the best and the worst first, and it's MC's turn.
I think the worst thing was probably that first scene of him killing that guy off of the dragon. Like, he's got him in a chokehold. He could just subdue him. But mm-hmm. he picks up the knife and stabs this guy.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
That was absolutely my worst thing, because I was like, "This, he's just a nerd. Why is he murdering this man?" And knowing he's a soldier makes it, I mean, slightly better. Very slightly better. But yeah, I was just like, that was a brutal kill. But since you already took that as your worst thing, I will take the death of the dragon, because it made me really sad when they killed a dragon. My best thing, however, was the fact that
he's a massive Yoji's nerd.
Such a nerd, and like, he's in the self-defense. He flat out says, like, the reason I'm in the self-defense force is because it pays me well enough to buy a lot of comics and play a lot of video games. So get off my dick, y'all. I don't want to kill anybody. I just want to play some video games. And hey, respect.
The fact that he's good at his job is kind of like another thing. Like,
yeah,
he's good at what he does.
He's real good at hand-to-hand combat, at the very least. We know that so far. We'll see what else he's good at later, but so far he's good at hand-to-hand combat. What was your best thing?
I think just, like, seeing the duality of this person. Like, no one person is one thing, ever.
Sure.
And it's really showing, like, hey, this person who's in the military, he's not just in the military. He's like this nerd. He enjoys video games and manga. So you can't always judge everyone by how they appear.
Yeah. I think that's true. I do think that being in a military force carries a certain amount of stigma with it. And I think that stigma is often accurate. And this is an awkward thing to talk about in our current political climate, because I think the same thing is true of being a police officer. But hey, we'll be back the next time to talk about season 1, episode 2 of Gate, which is called Two Military Forces. Until then, MC, don't change the channel, but do change the poopy diaper that is stinking up the room. Hi. Yes, you stink. You stink, squirmy boy. Let's go change your diaper.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever, so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
We've set up new ways that our listeners can interact with us. So Twitter and Instagram have been there for a while. We've got an email account. All of that's BaseSFcast. The emails at basesfcast@gmail.com. But now there's a Facebook page. So you can go to facebook.com/basesfcast and you can find the page for the show. And then there's also on that page, there's a button that says join group. We'll probably watch the group more than the page. To get to the group, you do have to know what one of our names are, which if you don't at this point, I'm a little hurt. We also have a YouTube account. If you search basesfcast on YouTube, then you'll find the episodes, but on YouTube. I was gonna say, but in video format, but it's not really in video format because we don't record our faces. I guess we do record our faces. We're not putting up videos anyway. BaseSFcast on YouTube. And then the final thing is, MC, you want to tell them about the voice messages?
Oh yeah, that's right. On Anchor, you can actually go onto our podcast and it's a button. It's just a button that they can press.
It's just a button. It says send voice message.
And you click on that and you can record a little voice message for us. In fact, what we really are looking for is for people to drop in their opinion on the show that we're currently watching. And we will drop a few of those into episode 3.
Yep.
Probably right before we rank the show.
Yeah, I think that's the place to do it, is kind of as we're wrapping up our thoughts on the show, then we can get a little bit of your thoughts on the show. And the page for that is just anchor.fm/basesfcast. Just whatever website you're on, put basesfcast at the end of it. Unless it's an adult website. Don't do that.
I mean.